From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for August 21st, 2016. A busy last week in politics. We'll bring you up to date on all the latest from the state fair to the road to the White House. It's time to grab the Sunday paper, go get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to keep your weekend going great. Well, I mentioned the state fair, and before you even ask me, Dave, or
yes.
Sam, the answer is no. I did not try any of the exotic fair food this year, like the cricket pizza.
Cricket pizza.
You know, there's just too many carbs in this stuff for my taste. And besides, I'm not sure. If you can explain this to me. What is the thrill of eating hot fried foods when it's 90 degrees outside?
With humidity to match.
Exactly. And the sun is beating down. I mean, I just don't get it. I don't understand that.
I don't really have an answer. Sam?
You had one job.
You're the young man here in the crowd.
You had one job, Rick. Eat something fried. And you couldn't do it.
No, I could not do it. It was blistering down in Springfield, and as it usually is for the state fair. In fact, on Republican Day, they had all of the speakers were in the center of the lawn, the ag director's lawn at the state fairgrounds. The speakers were in the center to address the crowd, and the crowd was kind of in the round, as it were. Nobody wanted to leave the covered tent and leave the shade to go out and literally sit in the hot sun to listen to speeches. I mean, they delayed the program till they could get enough people convinced to fill out the crowd so it would look good for the TV cameras. The next day, the Democrats decided just, we'll leave everybody under the tent. We'll just talk to everybody under the tent for the shade. But it was blistering hot. And, you know, Springfield had gotten some very heavy rains on a week ago, and that shut down a lot of the parking for vendors and parking for fairgoers, and it was a little swampy in some parts of the fairgrounds. But I was there to do a job. Okay. I was there to be a reporter, not to be a food critic.
How popular was the cricket pizza?
I'm not sure I've really found anybody that actually tried it.
Couldn't resist.
Yum, yum. Doesn't that sound tasty?
Real crickets, too?
Real crickets, yeah.
Mm.
Yum. Yeah. Sorry. Just imagine that. I'm sure people tried it, though. I mean, it is.
They put anything on pizza these days.
Well, or on a stick and deep fry it, you know.
Yeah. Corn dogs don't do anymore. Everything on a
that's,
stick.
That's too simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit, I would probably once like to try like a deep fried Twinkie. That I'm curious about. But beyond that, forget it. I mean, normally I go for the pork patio for the pork chop sandwich.
Mm-hmm. No horseshoe?
Here again, it's 90 degrees. Now, granted, it's not deep fried, but it was just too blistering hot for all that kind
no,
of stuff.
No, I know. I understand what you...
And then I come back Friday evening and get to Chicago, and it is just as blazingly humid here as it is. I was looking forward to get that nice lakefront breeze and things like that, and it's like, I never left Springfield. It is just a sweat.
Well, you're going to like today and tomorrow.
I'm loving it, I'll tell you. I mean, just the fact that, you know, here we are, temperatures in the 60s this morning.
Yeah.
Just being able to wear a long sleeve shirt.
60 at O'Hare. In fact, I heard Mike Hammernick earlier this morning saying that some of the overnight lows were the coolest temperatures we've had around here in a month.
I believe it.
So,
this open your windows today, folks. This is
true.
This is as good as it's. Of course, if you're near the lakefront, you may not want to open the windows because of the sound of the plane noise as the planes blow by. For today, the last day of the Air and Water Show, last day of the Illinois State Fair today, last day of the Olympics today. All kinds of, the sounds of summer starting
going
to
away.
Churn to a close.
By the way, I want to just add a quick update here. All is well in the licensing department.
Really?
I told Sam, and I believe I mentioned it to you also, Rick, thanks to our caller last week to suggest that I go to the Express Secretary of State's office. I did, and I was in and out in a flash, and I am now all legal.
Fantastic. The one at 69 West Washington
Street.
That's the
one. Yes. Very efficient, very friendly people down there. So thanks to them. Thanks to the caller. Thanks to Sam, you, everybody. You're my support system.
Now, there's a reason you had to get a new license, right?
Dot, dot, dot.
It was expiring.
Why was it expiring? Dot, 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 dot.
Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot.
I saw him in the hallway this morning, and I said, "What's tomorrow?" And he just blushed. Bright
I'm counting
red.
Down the hours.
Counting him down. Well, I mean, for the party, right?
Well, that and let's see. We've got... 16 hours and 46 minutes before the big day tomorrow.
Before the big birthday.
Birthday, yes.
Yes.
60.
Yep.
Oh, see, now I wasn't going to go there.
I'm sorry.
Well, Sam.
Leave it to the kid.
Yeah, leave it to the kid. Leave it to the kid. Right. Kids say the darndest things. You should know that.
I bet he doesn't know where that comes from either.
No.
Or do you?
Now Sam's
now
blushing. Thank you, Art Linkletter, wherever you are today. That was
who's
worth
Art
it.
Linkletter?
Right, that was
what's
worth
a
it.
A house
right
party.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you,
Dave,
sir.
And I hope you enjoy. I got Dave a little present.
Go on WGNradio.com. We're on the web here.
And you can see it in the live video stream.
A very appropriate shirt for this election year, I might add.
Well, it's a goat. It's not a donkey.
Well, it has the appearance of a, you know, the political...
This is about baseball. This is about the Cubs. I mean, this is about
Murphy the goat.
Mm-hmm. Right? We're gonna lift that curse. And,
yes, we are.
And I am not going to pet the goat this year if I see it. I think I did that after the Cardinals. They swept the Cardinals last year, and then of course we know what happened with the Mets. But not this year.
Leave the goat alone.
I will leave. Now there's a bumper sticker.
That's right. Leave the goat alone.
That would have looked good at the state fair. I could have sold a bunch of those.
Hey, did you happen to get into some of my favorite events down there? The hog calling contest or the husband calling contest?
I think actually you were right that it was like last Sunday.
Yeah, they have those usually right away. I think you showed up later.
But you know, here again, if you exclude a couple of presidential campaign seasons when I was on the road, this is number 34.
Wow,
Illinois State Fair. Okay.
Wow.
So it's kind of way off the bucket list these days. and I think truly like the only person who appears regularly on WGN that's been to more state fairs is Orion.
Is Orion, of course.
And of course, Orion has a building named after him.
Yeah.
On the fairgrounds.
Right, right. And not just the Illinois State Fair.
Right.
The Wisconsin State Fair, the Indiana State Fair, probably the Iowa State Fair. Oh, yes.
Which are all very good fairs,
mm-hmm.
I have to tell you. I mean, and Wisconsin State Fair, I think, is truly one of my favorites.
You want to start the song now? Our state fair is a great state fair. Don't miss it. Don't even be late.
You want to tell us where that's from?
State Fair, the musical.
I just was checking for Sam. I did have some friends Wednesday night. I did not attend, but Wednesday night, Kiss performed at the Illinois State Fair. And... they were getting $60 for trackside tickets.
Hmm.
And which is, I guess, where you want to be to watch Kiss. But it was a
rock and roll all night, party every day.
But to their credit, they're doing a their summer tour is to generate money for veterans organizations.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
So the night ended with them performing the national anthem, kind of Jimi Hendrix style.
Right, as Kiss would do it that
way. With their teeth? Jimmy played with his teeth once, right?
Yes, he did.
Yes,
Woodstock?
He did. Yes, yep. He did.
Yep. I was there.
You were there. What, for a field trip last year?
Right, for the 30th anniversary.
Right. Yeah, nice try, Sam. Nice try. Well, anyway, a very happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Thank you, folks.
And I know you will celebrate it in appropriate style.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week.
Okay.
Provided I'm back.
Provided you show up. Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, Dave's here to keep us up on all the news. Sam's here with the latest sports. Producer Sean is here today to field your phone calls. We're at 312-981-7200. That's also our text number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. And Twitter at Symbol Sunday Spin. Engineer Bob is going to be tracking all of the planes as they fly by later this morning, starting with the 10 o'clock opening of the Air and Water Show. And remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes. Just search for my name, Rick Pearson. Well, coming up, we've got another great show today. After Dave's 7:30 news update, we'll be speaking to Democratic State Representative Robert Martwick of Chicago. We'll talk about a variety of legislative issues as well as a strong defense for a legislative colleague who's become an Uber driver. After the 8 o'clock news from Dave, we'll be speaking to Mark Polis. Mark is Executive Director of the Indiana-Illinois-Iowa Foundation for Fair Contracting. He's also one of the leaders of a ballot drive to constitutionally protect transportation dollars from being diverted to non-transportation uses. And then after the 8:30 news update, we'll be joined by Christine Redonio. Christine is, of course, the Republican leader of the Illinois Senate from Lamont, and we'll talk about several legislative issues, political issues, including the upcoming November election. That's all coming up, but first it's time for a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue and Tribune Tower on this beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics. And as always, another interesting week for the Donald Trump campaign. His campaign manager, Paul Manafort, quit Friday after Trump hired two new top advisors. Manafort's business also is under federal investigation over its work for pro-Russian interests operating in the Ukraine. Now, we also did see a little bit differently from Trump this past week, actually saying he regretted some of his controversial comments of the past.
Truthfully, it takes far too much time and can often make it more difficult to achieve total victory. Sometimes, in the heat of debate and speaking on a multitude of issues, you don't choose the right words or you say the wrong thing. I have done that. And believe it or not, I regret it. And I do regret it, particularly where it may have caused personal pain.
Now, that's Trump obviously speaking from a teleprompter, as you can tell in that measured cadence. But Trump's new aides believe that Trump should be Trump, speaking off the cuff rather than using teleprompters. And so he couldn't help himself when he told voters he'd never forgive them if he lost to Hillary Clinton.
Can you imagine how badly I'll feel if I spent all of that money, all of this energy, all of this time, and lost? I will never, ever forgive the people of Connecticut. I will never forgive the people of Florida and Pennsylvania and Ohio, but I love them anyway. We'll see. I think we're going to do very well.
And then you had Trump speaking in Detroit telling African-American voters, quote, what the hell have you got to lose, unquote, by voting for him over Hillary Clinton. Still, the Trump campaign rolled out the first ads of his general election campaign, and they go hard after Hillary Clinton when it comes to his vow to make America safe again.
In Hillary Clinton's America, the system stays rigged against Americans. Syrian refugees flood in. Illegal immigrants convicted of committing crimes get to stay, collecting Social Security benefits, skipping the line. Our border open, it's more of the same, but worse. Donald Trump's America is secure. Terrorists and dangerous criminals kept out. The border secure. Our families safe. Change that makes America safe again. Donald Trump for president.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
And finally, after questions about whether he really wanted to debate Hillary Clinton on September 26th, Trump told Fox News that he's actually looking forward to a chance to debate the Democratic nominee.
Well, I look very much forward to it. I like being off the cuffs. You know, I've been in 11 debates. I never debated before. My whole life is a debate, but I've never debated before. And I really enjoyed the debates. I guess I did well in the debates based on all of those polls that they did after the debates. But I look forward to it. I think that, you know, Hillary really has made tremendous mistakes. She's got terribly bad judgment. If you think about Bernie Sanders, what he used to say all the time is she suffers from bad judgment, and she does. And I look forward to the debates. I think it'll be a very interesting evening.
Still, now all is not running smoothly in Trump land. His national spokeswoman, Katrina Pearson, no relation, different spelling, tweeted out that voters don't care about political fact-checking. And in an appearance on Fox News, it appeared she didn't really know the definition of the word literally.
Voters want someone that's going to fight back because they are tired of seeing left-wing reporters literally beat Trump supporters into submission, into supporting policies they don't agree with. It just shuts them down, and that's not what they're seeing in this campaign. So this is essentially Mr. Trump fighting back.
Now, Donald Trump also gave a speech on fighting terror last week. But Hillary Clinton sought to contrast it with her own strategy of going after terrorists tied to the Islamic State, or ISIS.
We will strike their sanctuaries from the air and support local forces taking them out on the ground. Under President Obama and Vice President Biden, we are making progress. We will surge our intelligence so we detect and prevent attacks before they happen. We will disrupt their efforts online to reach and radicalize young people in our country. It won't be easy or quick, but make no mistake, we will prevail. There is no doubt in my mind.
But problems with the Hillary Clinton campaign. A federal judge on Friday ordered her to provide written testimony under oath about why she set up a private computer server to send and receive emails while serving as Secretary of State. So you can bet that this email controversy will continue to dog her presidential campaign up to the eve of the election. And that's something that, of course, Republicans have been urging Donald Trump to focus on. Now, it was 6 weeks ago that the FBI director, James Comey, declined to recommend prosecuting Mrs. Clinton, saying that while her actions had been careless, they didn't constitute a crime. But this week, the FBI turned over to Congress documents it compiled in its investigation, including a 3.5-hour interview with Hillary Clinton, even as Republicans in Congress pressed their public case for her to be charged with perjury. Well, Clinton did get some help on the campaign trail. Actually, she'll be getting additional help this week. Bernie Sanders doing some events for her. But she got help last week on the campaign trail from Uncle Joe, as in Vice President Joe Biden, on a return home for him at a rally in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
What bothers me most about Donald Trump is his cynicism is unbounded. I really mean this. Think of this for a minute, because you're all raised in this area. You're different ethnicities, different religions, different backgrounds. But there's one thing I've noticed all the years I've spent, and I've always, always come home. And that is that the way you were raised, if you ever showed a lack of empathy for someone in trouble, if you ever summed up thought that the phrase he's most proud of, you're fired. Think about the phrase, you're fired. Think, no, all kidding aside, I really mean this. Maybe it's just me. But think about what your mother or father or grandmother or grandfather would have said to you. Think about everything you learned as a child. I really mean this. No matter where you were raised, how can there be pleasure in division and you're fired?
That's Vice President Joe Biden. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue on this beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. As I said, I was just out on the WGN Storm Center patio. Get those windows open. It's so refreshing after the last few days of all the heat and humidity. Well, as I mentioned, that the Olympics are wrapping up with the closing ceremonies tonight from Rio, and some people have raised questions about a diversity ad airing for the BMW Mini car, and they're questioning whether this ad is actually kind of related to Donald Trump. The ad closes with tennis star Serena Williams. Here's the ad.
Poor.
Foster kid.
Black.
Immigrant.
Cancer patient.
Small.
Muslim.
The only label that matters is Olympian.
Sports is always kind of the second, politics is the second sport of Chicago, as right. They say. And joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is State Representative Robert Martwick, Democrat from Chicago. Representative, thank you so much for getting up with me this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always great to be here.
You've been watching the Olympics?
I've been watching it, yeah, here and there. Not as much as my wife, but I get to it, yeah.
I'm a Winter Olympics guy.
Are you? Yeah, I grew up as a skier, so I always like watching the skiing. Yeah.
I mean, something about watching deluge. I could do that. Sometimes, though, it's like watching legislation in Springfield. It goes down a slippery slope, and who knows where it's going to end up. And that brings to mind a question. You've got a bill on the governor's desk.
We do.
That deals with the insurance industry and some issues that have arisen. We've spoken about this in the past, but why don't you give everybody a refresher course on this?
Sure. So it was an initiative of the state treasurer, Mike Frericks, and I was proud to be able to carry that legislation. And what it did was it, and I love explaining it this way, it made a requirement that insurance companies pay the proceeds of the policy to the beneficiaries of a life insurance policy when the person who was the policyholder dies. And most people say,
duh.
That's not a law already. And I said, believe it or not, it's not. And so the companies were engaged in a regular practice of if the beneficiary of a policy didn't know that they were a beneficiary after someone died and they didn't actively come forth and claim the benefits, the insurance companies had a regular business practice of saying, well, if they're not claiming it, we're not paying it. And they would hold these policies for years, as much as 50 years holding the proceeds. And then when they finally, after 50 years, when they would finally look for someone, if they were alive or if they weren't, they would pay the money to the treasurer as unclaimed property. But they're only paying the face value. And 50 years of interest on $20,000, if it's a small life insurance policy, is over $1 million. So they were keeping that $1 million of interest as a business practice.
And, as part of cost of doing business.
Yeah, and it's just, it's really a terrible practice, and it's something that the treasurer got involved in. And this is something that's going on all over the country in a lot of states. And so we wrote legislation that would require them to proactively look. And it's not a big thing. In this digital age, the Social Security publishes a death master file, which is a semi-annual report. Twice a year they publish this report that says, this is who's died. And we said to the insurance companies, check these, your policies against these people who, this list of people who've died. And if you find a policyholder has died, reach out to their beneficiaries, let them know. We've been doing hearings. The treasurer set up a task force while we await for the governor to sign this bill and to explore the issue further. And we've met. And it's amazing. We have people come here and people all say the same thing. Well, my parents never told me they had an insurance policy because that's what you did. You didn't tell people. The reason people buy this life insurance is to protect their beneficiaries. And when they die, the thought was always, they'll find out about it when I die. When the insurance company contacts them and gives them this big chunk of money, they'll think, thanks, Dad. But what they were, what we're finding out is that's not what was happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's not a common practice to say, you know, hey, you're going to be my beneficiary, or that kind of thing.
Right, right. I
mean, certainly there's like expectations, but then you don't know who to contact necessarily.
No, and you know, I've heard there was a testimony in Florida, and an elected official in Florida said something, and so I don't want it to be attributed to me. But he said, when that insurance agent is sitting at your dining room table, and he hands you the pen to sign that policy that you're going to pay on every month until you die, there is never a time when he says, but if your beneficiaries don't come and collect it, we're keeping the money, you know? And so that's not the expectation. And so this is really both a consumer protection bill. It protects the consumers to give them what their expectation is when they buy these policies, and to protect their beneficiaries who really, in a time of need, this is what they're supposed to get. And it's also really sort of a good business practice because there are a number of insurance companies who are already doing this. In fact, the ones that provide 70% of the life insurance policies that are sold, the insurance companies that are selling them are doing this. But roughly a third of the companies that are, or the policies that are being sold by companies who are refusing to do this. And that's not even fair for competition. We should all play by the same set of rules. So I look at this as a great bill because it's both protecting the consumer and it's leveling the playing field so that everyone can compete on the same, you know, turf.
So this bill passed.
It passed overwhelmingly in the House and in the Senate.
And it's on the governor's desk and
awaiting his signature.
And we're coming up towards deadline.
Yeah, we are coming up towards deadline. The insurance industry has hired a number of lobbyists who used to be former, in fact, they've hired just about everybody, but they've hired some very, very high-level former staffers of Governor Rauner's administration. So we'll see where that goes.
Kind of how the game works.
Yes.
But now Treasurer Frerichs also has established a task force on this.
Yeah, we've established a task force. Initially, our bill would have required the insurance companies to check all policies. And what they did was they pushed back against us, and the compromise bill eliminated lapsed policies. So now they're checking every active policy. But let's think about this for a second, Rick. A lapsed policy means someone stopped paying on it. Why would you stop paying on your life insurance policy? Right?
Well,
and so we've excluded those people from the bill, but the treasurer is not giving up on that issue. We gave up on the legislation. The task force is designed to bring light to that issue. If there's a lapsed policy, there's a good chance that the reason the person stopped paying was probably because they died. So let's go through those lapsed policies. Let's look through those too. And so the task force is looking into that issue and trying to see if we can craft specific legislation to deal with that part of it.
And these were, I mean, this whole issue kind of came to light as a result of audits, isn't it?
That's right.
Of unclaimed property?
Yes. The treasurer did these audits, and there was just so much money, hundreds of millions of dollars that was wound up being returned to the people that the money was supposed to be in the hands of due to these audits of insurance companies. And that's when, again, by agreement, some of the largest, most well-respected insurance companies said, we're going to go along with this practice, and we're just trying to bring all the other holdouts to the fold.
Now, Treasurer Frerichs says that it's in the state of Illinois alone, it's more than $550 million that they've identified should be paid out. And nationwide, the number is $7.4 billion.
Yep.
I mean, this isn't small change.
No, and much of this is smaller policies. These are those, you know, you're filling out an application at work and you're going through all the paperwork and there's a little checkbox for, you know, some sort of supplemental life insurance policy, and you buy it and you pay on it and then you die, and you whether you got a policy in the mail or not, went into a shoebox that got lost in a flood, whatever it was, nobody knows you have that. And those are those little policies, and there's just so many of them, and they add up to a lot of money.
We got a text. Where can you find out the names of the companies that are good on this?
A while ago, you posted it on your website. I'm sure the treasurer has access to this. I never remember them off the top of my head. They're most of the big ones that you would know. But what I would suggest is this. I'm sure if you go to Treasurer Ferrick's website, he has a list on there too. But more importantly than this, the governor hasn't signed this yet. And what I would tell people, and I tell people this all the time, if you have life insurance, immediately go find your policy, Xerox it, hand it to all the beneficiaries and tell them what to do, hand it to your best friend, hand it to your closest family, a relative or advisor, and let them know, if I die, this is out there. Please go claim it.
This exists. Yeah. This exists. Now, of course, the company that's been cited the most by Treasurer Frerichs is Kemper Insurance.
Yeah, so Kemper is the one that in the middle of the audit, when he was auditing all these insurance companies and they were all willingly going along, Kemper is the one that said, we need to get some information to you. Let's just take a break. We'll come back. And in the meantime, they ran over the courthouse and filed a lawsuit to stop the audit. And so they've been fighting. They've been doubling down on this. They're really opposed to this policy. They don't think that they should be required to find beneficiaries or make any good faith attempts to do it. So they've been fighting him pretty strongly.
And that court action is still taking place?
It's still pending, yep.
Okay. So we know the bill, though, is on the governor's desk.
The bill is on the governor's desk. He needs merely put his pen to it. And again, this was agreed. It was bipartisan. And even the insurance companies at the time agreed to this form of the bill. Not all of them, but the insurance lobby did.
I want to ask you about another bill that got some bipartisan support.
Sure.
And that has gotten a lot of attention. And that's the automatic voter registration bill, which the governor vetoed.
Right.
He used his mandatory veto. I don't know if he used his mandatory veto. He made recommendations, but he totally vetoed the bill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think there are some legal questions here. And he says this is, wants to prevent voter fraud opportunities, those kinds of things, which, as we know from stories, are somewhat isolated. But this is the bill that would have allowed you'd automatically be registered when you got your driver's license or updated your driver's license. It would affect the address changes and those kinds of things. And we're going to take a quick break, but I want to get your thoughts on what happens next on this. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by State Representative Robert Martwick. And we're talking about the automatic voter registration legislation that the governor vetoed. And not only was this for driver's license facilities, getting your driver's license that you'd be automatically registered to vote or have your registration updated, but eventually it was to expand it to people that seek other state services as well.
Right.
And I don't know the legalities of all of this,
yeah.
But one of the things the governor cited was this kind of under federal law, you have to attest that you are who you are and that you're seeking to vote.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is.
So, and again, I like you, I'm no expert on the federal law regarding this election requirement. But when I was at the press conference with David Orr, and he was a driving force behind this bill as well, there was explanation that that unequivocally the governor is interpreting that law wrong, which is interesting because there were four legal staffs, and I mean the legal staffs of all four parts of the legislature, right? Democrats and Republicans, Senate and House, all worked on crafting this bill. It passed 50-7 in the Senate. It was a good bill. It was vetted. And the governor has found some problems with it. And interestingly enough, there were seven requirements that he suggested be changed. And the group that was, I was supportive, but I was not active in this. But they agreed to five of them. The two that were left out, curiously, one of them was pushing the effective date back from January 1st, 2018 to January 1st, 2019.
And 2018 is important because that's the next race for governor.
That's right. And so, it's just, it looks like politics is playing a role in this. My understanding of this bill, again, when you have four top legal staffs coming together and finding a compromise bill that Democrats and Republicans can agree on, it's a good bill. And it should have been signed. He should have used an amendatory veto. We could have dealt with that, but this bill should be going into law.
Well, except that the House doesn't deal with the mandatory vetoes.
Well,
under Speaker Madigan doesn't deal with the mandatory vetoes.
Well, yeah,
that's the tradition.
I know.
I want to ask you about something that kind of surfaced social media wise,
sure.
And you came to the defense of one of your legislative colleagues, Jaime Andrade, for driving an Uber, and how, because of the way that the legislative pay has now been thrown into the back of the queue by Comptroller Munger, and of course she's now launched a proposal that's no budget, no pay, even though it would appear to me it's of dubious constitutionality.
Yeah.
You know, some people have raised some issues about, you know, who are you to try to pretend that you care about the middle class?
Well, and
I'm trying to sum it up in a broad way.
And that's
way
that.
Here.
Yeah, that's and I understand that's, you know, that part is political and that's okay. And what I said was, and you're right, I did come to the aid, but it wasn't the aid of Jaime Andrade. There was an article about him having to drive Uber because he had to pay his mortgage. State representative driving 50 hours a week of Uber, right? So never mind that being a state representative and working on a budget, just go drive Uber because you got to pay your bills. What I was coming to the defense of really was, and not to be too cheeky here, but really our system of democracy, it's not just Jaime Andrade. There's a lot of legislators who treat this as a full-time job because maintaining other employment while being a state representative is challenging. Who's going to hire you for 4 months out of the year? Oh, and by the way, I have to miss at least one day a week during those 4 months, right? It's a challenge. But even more than that, it's not just about Democrats. There's a number of Democrats who are poor and middle class that serve in the House of Representatives, Jaime Andrade being one of them. But there's a Republican who was very noteworthy. He had to loan himself money from his campaign fund. Now, can you imagine running to the lobbyists and saying, hey, I need some campaign contributions because I got to pay my mortgage? That's terrible. And so what I said was, what I was trying to say, and maybe I didn't do it very well, was that putting pressure on elected officials to make a decision that you want, and you're using financial pressures to do that, is wrong. Whether it's offering a bribe or denying them pay is wrong, because now they are forced to make decisions that maybe they wouldn't otherwise make because they're in a financial pinch. That's not good for our system of democracy. I use the word corruption, which of course everyone thinks of corruption as stealing. I meant it as a corruption of the process. It's making people make decisions that they wouldn't otherwise make because of this external pressure. And I really believe that if you're going to tell people that the only one who can serve is people who can afford to do it for free, then you'll lose the representation of a whole chunk of our society being poor and middle class people because they have to pay their bills.
I mean, in some respects, driving an Uber probably puts you more in touch with people.
Absolutely. And this is the lifestyle that Representative Andrade lives, and that's great, right, in that sense. But it's still an outside financial pressure. He's making ends meet. I lauded him for that because unlike a lot of people in our legislature, and I say this all the time, he's driving Uber. Good for him. He's busting his behind, and he's not putting himself in a situation where he has conflicts of interest. But you know as well as I do, Rick, what do other legislators do to make ends meet? They do consulting on other government contracts. What does that create? Conflicts of interest. And that's one of the biggest problems with our system. We should be seeking to remove those so that legislators are making decisions free from outside influences. We shouldn't be seeking because it sounds good and it riles up the base. You know, at some point, elected leaders are supposed to have a little courage and say, that's a bad idea. And that's a horrible, horrible idea. And, you know, I said this in my post. People repeated it. It changed it around very differently. I was able to go 13 months without accepting my pay because I'm an attorney and I have outside income. It wasn't easy, but I did it. It was a commitment. Until we passed a budget, I wouldn't do that. But what gives one person, and especially the comptroller, the right to decide when you've done your job sufficiently for her liking? Because originally what she said was no pay until a budget. Now she's saying, well, until it's a budget that I like, because we passed a budget. Wasn't a good one. I'll agree with you. But we passed a budget. Now she's saying, well, that wasn't good enough. So does she get to decide everything? Should it be no pay if you vote for a tax increase because a lot of people don't like tax increases? Or how about no pay unless you do vote for a tax increase because that's what we need to balance the budget? Why does she get to decide? That's so wrong on so many levels.
Well, and we saw an instance where it was Governor Quinn wanted to have the pension issue addressed and tried to block the pay, and that was struck down by the courts.
Yes, and for all of your listeners, you can look it up. I took him to task just like I did her. It is the wrong thing to do, no matter who does it, no matter what their reason is. It's not your job to put financial pressure on a representative. Can you imagine? I was on another show here, and someone called in and said, well, if you don't do your job, I said, well, wait a minute. I said, no matter what district you're in, do you want people to vote against your interest just so they can get paid? Just cave in, whether it's the Republicans saying, okay, I'll just do whatever Madigan wants, or the Democrats saying, I'll just do whatever Rauner wants. I need my pay. That's wrong.
It's and as I said, and now, of course, this has become a major theme of Comptroller Munger's reelection campaign as she's being challenged, or actually her election campaign. She was appointed to that position by Governor Rauner, and she's being challenged by Democratic Chicago City Clerk Susana Mendoza. Well, one issue here that's surfaced in all of this discussion is about, you know, and we've heard this argument before. It's normally raised at Speaker Madigan about if you work for a law firm that deals with property taxes and property tax appeals, that, well, then you have no motivation to want to do anything about freezing or lowering property taxes.
Well, and I hear that, but of course that's I don't know what anyone else's motivation is, but you know, I'm in fact about to release a plan that I've been working on that would call for a large property, you know, and it's not a new concept. You know, it's been around since the days of Don Clark Netsch, but I believe in it. I campaigned on it in 1996 when I ran for the state senate and lost. I believe in replacing the funding for schools with income taxes. So I'm going to advocate for a progressive income tax with good rates. And I'm going to advocate both for additional funding of education and money dedicated to a property tax relief, lowering property taxes, not a 2-year temporary freeze. That's nonsense. I worked in local government. You'll just delay costs for a couple of years and they'll be more expensive down the line. We need real property tax relief, and I'm advocating for that. So, you know, it's fine. Everybody can cast those aspersions, but until you know what I'm doing, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, and I know in a number of instances, even just the talk of a property tax freeze prompted local governments and school districts to levy as much as they could out
yes.
of fear, whether they needed it or not.
That's right. And I've always opposed the property tax freeze because, to me, that is a Band-Aid approach on a severed artery. I mean, it does nothing. It accomplishes nothing except punish the local governments that have run close to the belt, and the other ones will just delay stuff in the future and it'll just cost more in the future. You need to replace the dollars that we forced local governments to spend with state dollars so they can afford to actually defray some of those costs, swap some of those costs out. State picks up the tab for some of the stuff they're doing. They're forced to lower their taxes and then be resubject to the property tax caps, which means less property taxes every year going forward in the future.
State Representative Robert Martwick, Democrat from Chicago, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks
on the
for
Sunday
having
Spin,
me.
And I'll be looking forward to seeing the tax swap plan
it's coming
that you
up.
Offer.
Thank
Very
you.
Good. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. Donald Trump got some kind words from an unlikely source at the end of the week. Former Louisiana Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu complimented Trump for going to her home state on Friday to bring attention to the devastating floods in the region. President Obama is due there on Tuesday. Here's former Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu on CNN.
I want to thank Mr. Trump for coming to Louisiana. I think the governor's admonition about not using it as a press op is a good one, but he brought attention to our state, and we need that now because this disaster, Brianna, is far larger than people can appreciate on television. And if you could see it from a drone's perspective and look down on all of South Louisiana, this is not just a Baton Rouge area event, Livingston Parish, Ascension Parish, to the south central part of our state and southwest, all the way over to Calcasieu. This was a horrible rain event.
That's former Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu. from Louisiana, and truly it is a very devastating event. I have people very close to me that are down in the Baton Rouge area right now. The devastation, the pictures are just horrible. And, you know, if you can do anything to help out, you can certainly go to redcross.org and make a donation for relief efforts there. But a lot of people feeling in the Baton Rouge area that Katrina and the aftermath of that in New Orleans, that got so much attention, and that they're not getting the attention or necessarily the help that they need down there. So please keep everybody in Louisiana in your thoughts. And if you can help out, as I said, redcross.org, you can certainly help out there. Well, joining me now on the show is Mark Paulus. Mark is executive director of the Indiana-Illinois-Iowa Foundation for Fair Contracting. And he's also one of the leaders in this ballot drive. There's on the November 8th ballot. It's already going to be there. It's the constitutional amendment we know is going to be there. It was passed by the General Assembly to put before voters. And basically, this is to try to, I guess, put in a lockbox, as we know the former vice president used to say in his campaign, but to put in a lockbox transportation money. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rick. Really appreciate you having me here this morning.
Why should voters care about this?
Rick, this has been a problem that's really been around, at least in Illinois, since as far back as the 1930s. We have charged fees, levies, assessments on transportation, from motor fuel taxes to driver's license fees to vehicle registrations, and that money has gone into a dedicated fund, typically known as the road fund, as well as various other funds. Unfortunately, that money has not always been used for transportation.
Well, we've seen in the past, I know, like the Secretary of State would take an administrative cut. State police, I think, were taking a cut. But it seems like now, and you could argue there is a highway related connection to that. But now we're seeing the road fund as kind of a supplemental piggy bank for state government.
That's right, Rick. The problem has been that it hasn't just been funding things that have some tangential relationship to transportation. It's been a wholesale diversion of that money. We've had over the last 12 years, roughly $6.8 billion has been diverted from the Illinois Road Fund and used for non-transportation related purposes. As recently as 2015, during the fiscal year budget fix, we swept nearly $500 million out of the road fund for general revenue fund purposes.
And, I mean, and that's across the board. It's GRF, General Revenue Fund, so that means it could go to anything, but not... But it's coming out of the road fund is the issue.
That's exactly right. And when a driver goes to the pump and pays their state and federal motor fuel taxes, when they go and get their driver's license, when they register a vehicle, I mean, they truly believe through polling, asking, 900 to 1,000 different registered voters out there, they believe that that money is going to transportation. So they're quite surprised when they find out that $500 million that could have otherwise been used to, used for one of the multimodal transportation purposes is not being used for that.
Is the road fund just for roads?
No, the road fund is not just for roads. While there is a split between downstate and upstate in terms of percentages, it's also used for public transit as well.
So it's more comprehensive than just your typical roads and bridges thought. It's part of the transportation network.
It sure is. I mean, the group that I'm aligned with for the Safe Roads Amendment, Citizens to Protect Transportation Funding, this group is a broad-based group made up of labor, business, other transportation advocates, highway, road, bridge, rail freight, public transportation, bus, trains, airports, you name it.
And I mean, and this push for the Safe Roads Amendment, I mean, this does represent everybody kind of in industry, because there is, it's important, Illinois being the center of the transportation world, it's jobs here that are at stake, isn't it?
It sure is. I mean, just to give you kind of sort of a sense of the broad transportation network in Illinois, I mean, there's 144,337 miles of highway. There's 67 public transit providers that transport over 400 million riders every single year. There's 26,514 bridges, 113 public use airports, 40 freight railroads, and the second largest railroad network in the country. I mean, the reality of it is we are the transportation hub of this nation.
And without transportation, I mean, but there, we have the jobs issue too, about the fact of the construction jobs, and Illinois has been very neglectful when it comes to its infrastructure.
It sure has. Over the last several years, we've had different studies done by different groups. More recently, we had a study done called the Better Roads Ahead. It was done by the Illinois Economic Policy Institute. They use this in-plan model. It's an economic input-output type of a software. Just looking at the $6.8 billion that was diverted from the road fund, it cost the state of Illinois 4,747 direct construction jobs and a $3.2 billion decline in economic activity due to these diversions.
Because if that money had gone in, work would have been done, salaries would have been paid, that would have gone into the economic activity of the state, and quite frankly, that would help taxes too. More taxes would get paid as well.
That's exactly right, Rick. And this in-plan model, it's not to say they just looked at the $6.8 billion that was diverted from the road fund. I mean, they take into consideration that money was used for something else. So, that study and that in-plan model does take into consideration that it was spent on other purposes, created other jobs, created taxes in other sectors. But nevertheless, the net loss at the end of the day is massive.
I mean, and so we have this group, this alliance that you're with, the Citizens to Protect Transportation Funding, and I mean it's raised over $1.2 million as a ballot committee to push for this, and I mean this is kind of just the start of the rolling out for the public advocacy process. And when we're going to take a break in just a couple minutes, in a minute here, but when we come back, I want to ask you about, how do you sell this? I mean, because, when you look at the ballot initiative, it has to be printed in full. The constitutional amendment has to be printed in full. And it's almost like when you are going to vote on a local school referendum on a bond issue kind of thing, there's a lot of language in there. And, sometimes it becomes a little cumbersome. So I want to talk more with Mark Polis. We're going to talk more about the Lockbox Amendment, or as they call it, the Safe Roads Amendment, in just a second. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We're speaking with Mark Polis. Mark is Executive Director of the Indiana, Illinois, Iowa Foundation for Fair Contracting. And Mark, what is that group, by the way? Just the Fair Contracting Foundation.
Yeah, so our organization, it's a joint labor management organization of the operating engineers, Local 150, which are typically your heavy equipment operating engineers, operating the vast majority of cranes in downtown Chicago, doing the road work, at least in the northern 25 counties of the state of Illinois. My group is made up of half of the management folks that are made up of associations that are members of things like Road Builders and AGC and other of those organizations, and then operating engineers, Local 150.
Yeah, so I mean, and this the group, the overall umbrella group, the Citizens to Protect Transportation Funding, it goes far beyond just union and contractors. I mean, you've got the state chamber of commerce. The Todd Machey's a co-chair of this group as well. And as I said before the break, constitutional amendments are a bit cumbersome when they go on the ballot. So, I mean, how do you sell this as to how important this is that people should care? One is by labeling it the Safe Roads Amendment, I understand, but what's the education and advocacy process here?
Yeah, Rick, so it's this is like any other campaign. This is a statewide campaign. So it runs north to south, east to west, rural to metropolitan. It's going to require at least a majority of those voting in the election, or 60% of those voting on the question to vote yes. We are going to have to spend, millions of dollars. We've raised thus far close to $1.5 million for this particular campaign. folks that would like to learn more about it. We've got a website now. Has a lot of information. It's at www.saferoadsamendment.com. They can donate to that particular campaign. But at this point, it's really been a broad-based support of both business, labor, and transportation advocates that have instituted really bipartisanship within this committee and are going to be going both on broadcast television, cable television, direct mail, signs in yards, you name it, everything you would do for a campaign, we're going to be doing for this. As you mentioned, it's a constitutional amendment. The problem with that is there's a whole lot of legalese that appears on the ballot, as it often does, and the average voter, if they understood that, would vote yes, I believe. The problem is as you read it, many will say, I'm not sure what to make of it unless they're educated.
And you know, everybody also, because it is a constitutional amendment, this is unlike the issue that we've been talking about as far as redistricting, which that's an issue now in the Illinois Supreme Court. But that was a citizens' initiative. This was a legislative passed proposed constitutional amendment, which means it goes on the ballot. It took 3/5 majority support in both chambers to go on the ballot. Doesn't require even any action by the governor. It's done by joint resolution. So it's on the ballot. And the Secretary of State is obligated then to also send out a mailing to registered voters explaining the pros and the cons of this constitutional amendment. I'm not sure I've heard anybody that's against this constitutional amendment. Is there?
Neither are we, Rick. So that's a good thing. We're hoping that, today's show and people that continue to hear about this particular amendment start getting excited about it. It is transportation. It doesn't excite a whole lot of people. But the reality of it is there's no sign on a bridge that tells you whether or not that bridge is deficient. There's no sign on a road that tells you whether or not that road is deficient. The reality of it is our own Illinois Department of Transportation right now at the funding levels currently would say that 61% of highways and 87% of bridges will be in only in acceptable condition by 2020. Those are not good numbers. The reality of it is that we have to, at the very least right now, protect the transportation funds that go into transportation-related funds in order to fix those.
I mean, I suppose there is an argument to be made, though, about constricting and earmarking to a point that in a state that is certainly in a financial mess, and that's certainly why the $500 million got swept in the 2015 budget agreement. But is it fair to truly constrict the state's ability to spend when it needs to on other purposes?
Yeah, Rick, this is there is no question about it. This is a constitutional amendment. This is not just a referendum or some ballot question that appears.
And it's not a law that can be passed and then repealed in 2 years or something like that.
Exactly. And I'll say it this way. It's an extraordinary measure in extraordinary times. One of the reasons why it is so important that this amendment passes right now is because of the budget problems that we're faced with in the state of Illinois right now. 2015 was a great example. We took $500 million out of the road fund that which otherwise should have been used for multimodal transportation purposes. The reality of it is that if we continue to do that, the numbers that I've just stated on bridges and roads will severely decline over the next decade. We're working on some numbers right now to find out what is the unfunded liability to the multimodal transportation system in the state of Illinois. And we're guessing right now that when those numbers come out, it's going to show that this is as bad as the pension crisis is in the state of Illinois. We need to do something about it, but we need to do something about it now.
Is it your thought that because of isolating this money away so that it can't be touched, that perhaps that could put even more pressure on in trying to come up with a comprehensive solution in sustainable funding of this state?
Yeah, I don't think so, but I can tell you that we're not the only state that has looked at this. I mean, there's other states like New Jersey and Wisconsin and other states that have been faced with the same budgetary problems that the state of Illinois has been faced with. I mean, this year alone, New Jersey's considering the same type of an amendment. In 2014, Wisconsin considered the same measure, and it passed by wide margins. 80% of the people voted for it, 20% of the people voted against it. But the thing that people have to understand about the road fund is that that albeit we have several special funds in the state of Illinois, and this happens to be one that we are singling out to protect particularly. And the reason why is because it is an extraordinary fund in the sense that over the winter months, the road fund does amass a fair amount of money in the billions of dollars that would otherwise be spent then in the next year. The legislature comes into session in January of every year, typically through May, and during that time, they're looking for places to patch the budget hole. One of the single largest funds that's out there because that money has been built up is the road fund. So unfortunately, we've been faced with, over the last decades, the legislature looking at that as part of the budget fix. We want to stop that. We want that money that's been paid for transportation to be used for transportation.
Well, I look at some of the numbers here, too, and I mean, you talk percentages, but, you know, 4,200 bridges in Illinois are in poor shape. Poor shape. Half of the roads in the state are in poor condition. And there comes with that, too, is not just the sweeping of money out of the road fund, but also the question of, you know, are we putting enough revenue into the road fund? And whether the state needs to take a look at that as well. I know that's not addressed by this amendment, but there is that issue of sustainability. And with Illinois, with its enormous transportation infrastructure, it takes a lot of money to just keep up and do the regular maintenance, let alone embark on, you know, needed improvements.
Yeah, Rick, agreed. You know, the latest studies that we've seen has shown that we have a lack of about $2 billion in additional income that's needed just to maintain the current state of the multimodal transportation system in the state of Illinois. But at this point in the budget crisis that we're in the state of Illinois, we don't see the path forward to fixing that in terms of, you know, raising any fees, levies, assessments, or anything on transportation. So the next best solution to that is let's protect what we already have.
Protect what you've got now, and then we'll take a look at the next step down the road.
Yes.
If there's a road that you can look down upon.
Yes.
Mark Paulus with the group called Citizens to Protect Transportation Funding. That's the umbrella organization for both business and labor that's pushing for voter support of a constitutional amendment on the November 8th ballot that will basically put transportation funding dollars in a lockbox so that they can't be used for non-transportation purposes. Mark, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. We were talking about the Safe Roads Amendment on the November 8th ballot. Once again, you can learn more about this proposal, this proposed change in the Illinois Constitution. You can go to www.saferoadsamendment.com. And as I said, this was a legislation that passed overwhelmingly in both the Illinois House and Illinois Senate to put this measure on the November 8th ballot, and it will be on the ballot. We're still waiting for the courts to decide the issue of the redistricting amendment. That was a proposed constitutional amendment done by Citizens Initiative, and the Illinois Supreme Court right now is weighing the constitutionality of whether redistricting in the form that that has been proposed by the Independent Maps Group is constitutional or not. So that is that's the other proposal that's still hanging out there.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning. A little bit overcast out there, just out on the WGN Storm Center patio, but it's still supposed to be bright skies ahead for today. A great day for the final day of the Air and Water Show on the lakefront, and always a good time. Joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is State Senator Christine Redonio. She's the Republican leader of the Illinois Senate, a senator from Lamont. And, leader, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
I wanted to start our conversation about your recent appearance at the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition group, talking about their push for immigration reform changes. Immigration, a big topic in the presidential election nationally. And I thought you had some very interesting remarks. There was, I believe the question was basically, you know, in as you travel the state, are there different attitudes towards the issue of immigration reform? And you stressed education.
Yeah, I do think there are different attitudes, and I think a lot of it has to do with people's exposure to immigrants. And because they tend to concentrate, for the most part, in more urban areas, a lot of the state is, you know, uninformed or maybe suspicious about these immigrants. They read things that they're taking jobs, and they believe that. And when it comes to education, the point I was trying to make is that I think both parties would serve the immigrant community well by, you know, educating people about the economic value of immigration. I think that people overlook that. As we heard, the immigrants tend to be more entrepreneurial, which means they create jobs. We as a country are slowing down in our population growth, and so in order to build our economy, we need more people, and immigrants can fill that role. Unfortunately, what happens on the political side is that both parties have made this sort of a hot potato issue. So Republicans tend to feed the misinformation and say, oh, you know, I can't vote for any immigration legislation that will be favorable to immigrants. So they don't try to educate their constituents about the value of immigration. On the other hand, Democrats use it as a wedge issue too, putting things out there, doing mail pieces, you know, about how a Republican might have taken a vote that, frankly, is probably good policy, but trying to, again, scare people off of the issue. So I think both parties have contributed to not having a good discussion about immigration.
And Illinois has been, I would say, progressive on, yes, that, on the issue. I mean, driver's licenses for undocumented, college access, mm-hmm, issues. And that almost seems counter to the national trend or the national theme kind of thing. I mean, is it hard as a Republican for some Republicans to have to explain their support for that? I think Bill Brady got hit with it in some aspects in running for governor in the primary.
Right. Well, it is hard, but because, again, it's been politicized as opposed to people talking about it. And we are actually somewhat progressive in terms of other states on the issues that you mentioned. At the end of the day, it has to be a federal issue. I mean, what we're doing is small stuff. But again, I think if you look at the votes, there aren't a lot of Republicans on those votes. And I know from talking with many of my colleagues, they may believe, because they, you know, have more exposure to the issue, that these are good policy approaches, yet they are nervous about their constituents. And I think, again, it's because, you know, we throw red meat and the Democrats then come back and use that to politicize the issue.
One issue, too, I wanted to ask you about was the governor's recent veto of the automatic voter registration bill. And I know that, you know, the groups in support of it are going after the governor and saying, oh, well, that was just political, that all he just wants to do is push this off till after the 2018 election. But the bill did get overwhelming support, 50-7,
right,
in the Senate chamber. And, you know, I hear things on both sides, you know, or that it was hastily put together or there were changes hastily made. I just want to get your view on that issue.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that was supported. The argument was made that it was probably an efficient way to go. However, all four caucuses, so Democrats and Republicans, all agreed that the bill was poorly drafted and would have created problems. So given that, it had to be vetoed. I think we will definitely see it again, but unfortunately, we should have taken more time to make sure it was right in the first place.
But it still got overwhelming support.
It did, and I think it will again. This was just that there were items in there, and I can't be specific, but it would have made the implementation very, very difficult.
So the issue was it probably shouldn't have been called in the first place?
Right, or we should have done the homework before it was called.
But you think that this is something that can be cleaned up?
Oh, I absolutely think it will be cleaned up, yes.
let's look ahead here, and let's look politically. I'm not going to get into who you're going to vote for president.
Thank you.
We already got your answer at the state fair on that. It's a private ballot. But are you concerned that there might be negative effects, or is it a mixed bag when it comes to Republican prospects in the legislative races?
You know, it's a very interesting year, not one that we've seen.
That's putting it mildly.
Yes. when it comes to legislative races, there's a couple of factors that are at work. Number one is the map. I mean,
right.
the Democrats drew the map. That is something we have to overcome every election cycle. It's very difficult for Republicans to win in many of these districts. Now, having said that, over time, some of these races are competitive. But in a presidential year, a lot of times we look to the top of the ballot and how is that going to impact a race? And in my view, I think both parties have some challenges there. To start with the Republicans, we have some Republicans who say, never Trump. I'm not voting for him. So our challenge is to get those folks to come out and vote for Mark Kirk, hopefully,
the other races.
The congressionals, the state race, state level races, because those are important. Because if they want change, which is, you know, what I think people are talking about, we have to get more balance in the legislature. Now, in some areas, though, Trump actually helps us, you know, especially in Southern Illinois. People like him a lot, and that he may be a plus for us. Then when you flip over to the Democrat side, all of their folks are not thrilled to death with Hillary. I mean, Bernie Sanders really hung in there for a while, I think longer than most people thought. So they've got a group of disaffected voters as well who are going, no way am I voting for Hillary. So do they stay home? And if they stay home, does that take away what's typically the Democratic edge in a presidential year?
Well, and of course, even a Democrat day at the fair, there was also the issue of now when you see national polling and Clinton doing well in states that are traditionally Republican states,
right.
An issue of complacency.
Correct.
That also could is a question of, is there a stay-at-home factor that exists there?
Right, right. I mean, I think the polling, the prediction of who's going to come out is very up in the air this year. We really don't know who's going to be coming out to vote.
But one thing we did see at the state fair, and I think you would agree with my characterization of this, was a kind of for the most part, a distancing effort to try to focus voters on the candidates as the candidates themselves rather than with any kind of national linkage.
Well, exactly, because, I mean, we know darn well there's people that really don't like Trump and there's people that love him. So I'm trying to walk that line. I don't care which one you are, but I want you to come out and vote for the rest of the races.
That's exactly how some people paraphrase Hillary Clinton as well. We're speaking with Christine Redonio. She's the Republican leader of the Illinois Senate. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, joined here in the Allstate Showcase studio by Senate Republican leader Christine Redonio of Lamont. And, leader, we've got a call from our friend Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick. Senator, I wanted to really talk about the deficit. I think the general consensus that in order to straighten out this deficit, we're going to have to generate some revenue. I know an income tax increase is probably not politically palatable at this time, but there has been discussion about expanding the sales tax base. So I wanted to get your opinion on some ideas and suggest, or do you think that there's no need, you know, to generate revenue. So that's my question. Thanks, Rick.
All right. Thank you, Ron. I'm going to paraphrase because we just had a little technical issue that Leader Redonio couldn't hear the question. But Ron was saying he thinks we need to address the basic, what he calls a deficit here of funding in this state, and that while an income tax increase might not necessarily be politically palatable, what about ideas such as expanding the state sales tax? Or do you feel that any revenue
right.
is needed at all?
You know, I am pretty much of the opinion that the governor promotes, and that is we need to, you know, get some things in order here in the state. And then at that point, we probably may have to look at some revenue. Revenue is an interesting issue because it's a known universe. I mean, there's no magic tax out there that nobody's thought of. So it's a matter of, you know, what are the possibilities? The positive about an income tax is it's, you know, spread very evenly. And sales tax, Ron is correct, is another big revenue generator. The problem we have with sales tax, though, is that because of local add-ons, particularly here in the city, we have the highest sales tax in the country. So I just don't think that it's viable to add sales tax.
Well, what about expanding it, though?
Oh, to services?
Right.
Yeah, that's easier said than done when you get right down to it. It's been talked about quite a bit.
It's been talked about since as long as I've been around.
Right, right. And so the thing is, what you tax? I mean, it's generally just a pass-through. So if you tax medical services or legal services, you know, it gets passed on to the customer. Now, if you start taxing things like dry cleaning or hair salon services, things like that, you have to look at, do you drive an underground economy or a cash economy as people try to avoid that? So what we find is that other states have implemented service taxes to a very small degree. So I'm sure we'll look at those. I think it's worth looking at. But again, it's easier said than done.
Well, and true, we're not even close to really looking at revenue issues, given the state of circumstances. Right. I mean, we're in a stopgap budget that's basically, I think, just a form of timeout for everybody. And we don't know what's going to happen going forward. I mean, what is anything going on right now?
No, right now there's nothing going on. And the reason there's nothing going on is when we were in session, the Democrats were crystal clear that they would not address any of the reform items until after the election. Because I think they're counting on the fact that if they gain seats, they don't have to deal with reform. Now, given those parameters, when they say, no way are we going to deal with this, the governor said, I'm not raising revenue to give you the same old lousy government we've had. So he's still focused on reform. And that's why I think this election is going to be really, really important. And I hope people don't stay home, because even if we don't get a majority on the Republican side, any movement in that direction is a message to the Democrats that people are, in fact, committed to change, that they think this state needs to have something happen different than has been going on.
Well, and unlike, as we talk about what an interesting election year this is, unlike past years where you have Governor Rauner, you have his wealth, he's got some wealthy friends, and he hasn't been shy about turning that money over to the state Republican Party, which in turn has funneled money over to the Republican State Senate Campaign Committee, the House Republican Organization. You've got State Representative Mike McAuliffe running ads in August in broadcast, in Chicago broadcast television, expensive ads. And the rule of thumb is once you're up, you can't come down. So there must be an expectation that those ads are going to continue to run. The Republican State Senate Campaign Committee running hundreds of thousands of dollars in cable advertising.
Right.
I mean, that makes this a unique election as well, because Republicans have the resources that they haven't had in the past.
It's totally a game changer. I mean, both in terms of the media that we're able to get, the mail, but the other place that we've been able to be effective where we haven't been as effective as Democrats before is in the ground game. A lot of the constituencies for the Democrats, such as the unions, often loan bodies to go out and knock doors and do that kind of thing for their candidates. And with the resources that we have available, we've been able to get up early and have people out there knocking doors since June. So that's another big difference. And that can make the difference in a close race. You know, one that you lose by 200 or 300 votes, that can make the difference.
But is the reliance on one man and their money, is that a good thing for the political system?
Well, I think at this point it probably is, because I think we so desperately need more balance in this state. That if we get that, it will build on itself and we'll be able to, you know, stay stronger after that. But we've been so disadvantaged between the MAP and the union, the public employee unions that are very active on the Democrat side, and then the trial lawyers that are very active in funding, and a lot of those are huge contributions. So I think this is sort of an even-up election.
We talked about the whether or not there might be a national effect, but certainly we're seeing this election really coming down in legislative races down to two people, mm-hmm. and that this is a referendum on Rauner versus Mike Madigan.
Yeah, I think that's there's a lot of that, and I think that's why after the election we'll see what happens. I mean, either there will be reform if Republicans pick up some seats. We don't have to get the majorities, but it'll be a message. If Republicans completely fall apart, I think that the Democrats will feel justified in staying the course.
Well, and I mean, recently, fairly recently, the governor was at the Tribune editorial board, and he said that, you know, Republicans could very well lose some seats in the Illinois House, and that that chamber is 71 Democrats. That's the bare minimum needed for a supermajority. But, I mean, a loss of Republican seats there mm-hmm. would be particularly damaging, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be. We and in the Senate, I anticipate that we will definitely net up. But, again, even if it's not enough to block something, the message to those folks then who are going to be up in 2018 is people want change. And they're going to be watching their voting a little bit differently than they do right now. So the dynamic, well, you know, remains to be seen. But I think in the Senate we will pick up seats.
And that chamber now is of the 59. You have
20.
You have 20 of the right. And picked up. You picked up. I think you didn't. You netted one.
Up last time, and then we should. You know, we've got one running unopposed in the what was previously a Democrat seat. So we should. You know, absolutely, we'll pick that one up.
Regardless of the source. You know, I remember a long time ago writing a story about a state Senate race in Rockford that had crossed the $300,000 mark. Okay. Yeah. Long time ago. Isn't the money just getting a little bit too crazy in all of this? I mean, I know there's the money speech argument and that kind of thing. But, I mean, this just seems to be escalating at such... And maybe it's my perception just because Republicans in the past, you know, haven't had the resources. But it just seems to me that the money is just escalating at such a tremendous rate that, you know, it's a different it's a whole different ballgame.
Well, it is, except that TV's expensive, cable's expensive, mail's expensive. I mean, you know, you've got to pay.
Radio's a very effective medium.
I always say that. especially down to state. And also drive time here is great. I mean, and it's used frequently for political ads. But it's not free. None of it is free. Now, I think what has happened is the campaign cycle's lengthened. You know, as I just mentioned, we've been out in the field and we're seeing ads now this early.
But is there a negative to that? Only because, you would figure right now is like the time you gear up.
Yeah.
Except that it's the never-ending cycle. And frankly, you know, that's one of the things why I hated Washington and Washington politics, mm-hmm. because it was a never-ending campaign cycle. Springfield didn't used to be that way.
Right, right. No, I think it's definitely changed, but it's changed because the media's changed. I mean, everything's, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week news cycle. I mean, so there's a lot of stuff out there in order to break through. I think you feel that you need more and more focus earlier on to break through all that information out there.
So coming from an old man like me, another breakthrough of the digital era.
Exactly.
Senate Republican Leader Christine Redonio, thank you so much for getting up and joining me here on the Sunday Spin.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We'll be back with more right after this.